Hello, everybody. I'm Lisa Burwell, your host of These Speaks, Conversations with Heart and Soul. I'm so excited today to have a wonderful, honest, authentic conversation with my friend, my dentist and cosmetic dentistry guru, Dr. Lindsay Hoppe. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, I'm happy to be here, Lisa.
Look at that megawatt smile there, walking billboard
full. Practice what you preach.
Practice what you preach, yes. I'm so excited. Thank you for agreeing to meet. I know we're going to have a good conversation.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Welcome. I'm going to cover so many different things. When you moved into town, when was that? What was it?
So vacationed here our entire lives and loved Texas, but decided we were done being sad every time we had to leave the beach. So we got here in 2014, just in time for our son to start kindergarten at Bay Elementary.
Perfect school.
Yeah.
Right. Did
it.
He have a great time?
He
here?
Loved
so
it.
I don't know any parent that didn't say that their child.
I mean, there were only 200 children in the school at that time. And, you know, now it's just the VPK. So you've got Dune Lakes that has like over 1,000 kids. So what's happened in Walton County just in the short time? I mean, I say short time, 11 years we've been here, going on 12 years now. Amazing.
So did you open your practice there in the same location?
Yeah. So we opened 38 Smiles in October 2015. So we just celebrated 10 years. I left behind my beloved practice in Austin, Texas. It was almost harder to leave behind than my mom. And I love my mom. That practice is my baby. I still hear from my patients and employees all the time. But we loved the small town feel here. We have an only child. We knew this is the place for us to be. And I knew that there wasn't anybody doing what I do here. People were still traveling to big cities for cosmetic dentistry. And I felt like there was room for me here. We might have been curled in the fetal position for the first year and a half, but people found out about us and the rest is history.
And the rest is history. Well, yeah. Of any dentist that I've ever been to before, you by far are hands down the most professional, knowledgeable. You feel like you're in very good hands in your operation. And it's hard to find dentistry. And when you're dealing with someone's mouth, you know, or you're getting, you know, your work done, it's most people that have fears, like one of the big fears that they have is the dentist.
100%.
Right?
Oh, absolutely.
I know. And your calming spirit and like your gregarious personality and you're so charismatic, like it takes all of that away. And your office is beautiful, like state of the art. Everything is like the best and the best. And you came to our little town. And when I first went there, I think it was 5 years ago. I'm like, wow, this is like uptown, right? And in 30th Avenue, which is also a very uptown place to be, kind of like the Rodeo Drive of our town, would you say? I mean, that's how I feel about that too. The best of the best. And I know, thankfully, you will be my dentist as well when I go in there. But like predominantly, I think it's 90%+ you prefer and do cosmetic dentistry.
Yes. Yeah, I was really self-conscious about my teeth growing up. And I was teased about them, actually.
Which I can't believe.
It was terrible. I just had really, really tiny teeth that had big gaps between them. It was a developmental issue. It wasn't an orthodontic issue. It wasn't something that could be fixed with braces. And so just before I went to college at Texas A&M, my parents got together with my good old boy family dentist in San Antonio, Texas, and said, help her with her teeth before she starts this new chapter in college. And he did just a little composite bonding, which is not a porcelain veneer. It's kind of a temporary thing, and completely changed my life. And I was like, that's it. If I can do this for someone else, because it truly changed my life.
Is that the moment that you said as you were going into college, this is what I want to do for my...
Yes. Okay. And then I went off on a tangent wanting to be a veterinarian for a while because of how much I love animals. But I came back to dentistry after not too long. And I just love making that difference for people.
Yes.
No one jumps out of the chair and hugs you when you fix broken molar number 19. But when you change the way that their smile looks, I was showing the girls earlier when we were setting up this photo. It's a meme. You might have even seen it, like go around. You know how funny memes get popular for a minute. And there's this guy missing a front tooth. And the whole thing is this front tooth. Nobody, every single person you show it to, they don't notice that he's missing an entire eyebrow. They just right. notice the missing
yes.
tooth.
Yes.
I've been doing this for 23 years because my life was so changed when my smile was fixed. That was my trajectory. In dental school, you don't get to go to the cosmetic dentistry program unless you're in the top of your class because it's considered a fluff item. They're really just trying to make everybody competent to be a doctor.
Okay.
But I had such a passion for that. I studied hard and I did make it into that program. Wow. And the chairperson of that program, Dr. Marilyn Ward, was awesome. She was phenomenal. She was brilliant. She's internationally known. She's a published researcher on teeth whitening and bonding materials to teeth. But she led the cosmetic dentistry program at the school, and she was really relevant because she maintained a private boutique practice in downtown Houston on the side. Sometimes when you're really up in academia, you lose kind of the relevancy of actually being in the clinic, but she did that, so she was so great. Her practice consisted of nothing but other dentists, plastic surgeons, celebrities who flew from all over the world to Houston for her to do their cosmetic dentistry.
Wow.
So she was terrifying. You always knew when Dr. Ward was covering clinic because you'd walk down there and everybody's standing straighter and everybody's panicking because if you didn't have your act together, she was going to dress you down in front of your patient. But if you had your act together, you could learn a tremendous amount from her. And so her assistant, her chairside assistant of many years, retired. And she went down to the dean of the dental school, who I think was also scared of her. Picture Cruella De Vil. You know what I mean? Anna Wintour. That's yes, your yes, flavor. Anna yes. Wintour.
Yeah.
That kind of person. Yeah. And she told the dean, I think that being my chairside assistant would be almost as valuable of a learning experience for students being here at school. And he said, I agree. Who do you want? And she said, I want Lindsay.
No.
So I skipped school every Wednesday for my entire dental clinical career to assist her on these cosmetic cases. So I came right out of school in 2003 doing them.
And I think you worked for her for many years, right?
Yeah. I mean, I was her chairside assistant for years.
Wow. Amazing.
It was amazing. So I learned literally from the best. And I thank God every day for that experience. That it just shaped everything for me.
Well, staring at your smile and your teeth right now, they're just like so beautiful.
Practice what we preach.
Right?
Yeah, so loved it.
Yeah, well, so our town did need you. It needed, you know, everything that you have to offer, both, you know, the dentistry and cosmetic dentistry. And I know you really started taking off like very quickly after you opened your practice.
Yeah, it was interesting because in Texas, you know, I've been in Texas my entire life. So everybody in Texas knew that was my history. Everybody knew where to go. They knew to come to me. I kind of wasn't prepared that when I moved to Florida, that not everybody here knew that about me. It took a minute. Something I think too that's been fun is having been doing cosmetic dentistry for 23 years is to see the evolution of various things. And one of the big ones was all of my employees just hammering me to get on Instagram, of all things, okay? I'm like, that is not me. I'm not going to be on Instagram, but finally did it 5 years ago. And I think something that happens is when you're putting your actual work out there and people are compelled by it and they decide that you're the person for them. And so what's ended up happening is people are traveling here to see me, which I consider an incredible honor. And then one of the very, very few silver linings of COVID was this whole virtual thing, you know? And so shortly after COVID, I started doing virtual consultations. And this has been like one of the best things professionally that I've ever done. People are able to fill out my little link. I mean, it's really like your name, your email address, and upload a couple selfies and what you want to do. And from the comfort of their own home, sitting on their couch, they can send me a consult for free. And I send them a video back analyzing their smile and telling them what I recommend, including what it costs. Mm. And that is where the traveling patients really took off. So just this week, I have two in from Texas this week. I've got one in from Kentucky week after that. I've got one coming from Switzerland in January, I've got a fellow dentist coming from the Bahamas in March. She wants me to do her porcelain veneers.
How exciting.
And so the virtual consultation thing has really made it fun because people, they kind of find me on Instagram for that and they can come from wherever. And then the other thing that I've found really interesting about that is the local people. You forget, like, people are, they're sometimes honestly like too self-conscious to come in. Like, truly, they're too self-conscious to come in person. They're ashamed. They're nervous. And I think those people really, really love the option to connect with me virtually and get the information. Can you help me? Am I helpable?
Right.
You know, what do I do? What's it going to cost?
Right.
That has been the most fun thing.
Well, two things, COVID, and then we had so many people flocking to this area, and our area grew exponentially, which means yours did as well, and all of our businesses did as a trickle-down effect. But the power of social media and Instagram, you just can't preach the virtue of it enough for a very, very quick snapshot into a platform that's technically free, even though you need capable, competent people running your Instagram account and managing it and curating it, which is very, very important as well. But it is the new website. It is the new phone call.
Yes.
It is the new everything. And if you don't know that, you're losing so much business. But in your case, too, when you show the before and after, you don't have to say, I'm good, you should come to me, because the proof is in the picture that you do amazing work and you can transform. And I think when we've talked about this before, it's after you do all the pre-op work and, you know, you basically decide what the smile is going to look like and you show it to them in a temporary way that they're able to understand what the smile is going to look like, then the actual application of it, if that's the way to describe the word, is a day.
Yeah.
One day, right? And then they come back like a couple of weeks later.
I mean, it's three visits.
Three visits,
start to finish.
Yeah, it's like technically a miracle meets magic.
It's so fun. I know. I mean, it's crazy. And you're so right. Like, I've heard it described as social proof.
Yes.
Social proof of your work.
Yes. Yeah, you don't have to say anything. You just have to show. Yeah. It's a show and tell game.
People connect with, they feel compelled by you, and it's not just the work, it's what you said about the patient or what led to that.
I have so much heart and soul into it, and this is a passion of yours. And I always am of the great belief that if you can find your passion, because some people sadly don't, but if you can and you do, you're like blessed beyond belief.
Yes.
And you can do what you love, and it's never like too hard, or the days are never too long. And even when they are, if you have passion, it's actually the energy that makes you be able to keep going, because you really, really care about it. And this is your passion. So a little segue into so much of your passion that you were for 2 full years the dentist for the Children's Volunteer Health Network, CVHN, which is a board that I'm a board member on their charity, and I love them so much, all of them. And Jane Baer does an amazing job, and Megan Trent, the executive director, does an amazing job. And I know you've seen other people in that role before. But how many years ago was that when you were the dentist for the
So kids? When we moved here in 2014, 30 Avenue, the Rodeo Drive of 30A was still Forest, you know. So it was going to be a while before my practice was open. And I made a connection. I can't even remember what the initial connection was, but I heard about CVHN and I got in touch with them. And it just so happened that they were about to transition with the dentist on staff that they currently had. So I knew that I wasn't going to be able to do dentistry for, you know, at least a year and a half, 2 years while, you know, the office went through construction. So I was the dental provider for CVHN for a year and a half. I mean, the funny thing is, I don't remember the last time I had done pediatric dentistry. I mean, I'm a cosmetic dentist. You do cosmetic dentistry on grownups, on adults. That was two of the most rewarding and most fun years of my professional career, was treating these kids in need, relieving their pain, making them feel better about themselves, making them healthier. The parents and families were so grateful. You know, Dentistry is one of those things that I think a lot of people immediately will go without when times are tough. You know what I mean? If it isn't hurting, you know, they're going to skip going to the dentist or whatever. I think we take that for granted sometimes. Those children and families were so grateful. It was just one of the most rewarding and most fun. And as you know, this organization, I mean, just the people behind it, the Dugas, the Bears, I mean, so it was no, you know, small perk that as the treating dentist on staff that I was able to do all the fundraising and the events too, just relationships, bonds that will last a lifetime, working for the good of local children. It's amazing.
And then the self-esteem that it gives the kids, because if kids have problems with their teeth and kids make fun of them, or just the pain, and the kids that don't, like, they have a lot of cavities, and a lot of them don't even have tooth. By the time they're 5 or 6, many of the people that, yes, they serve have never owned a toothbrush, yes, and then they give them the toothbrush. Mm-hmm. I mean, it kind of baffles me. We live in a town that's very wealthy, and we're blessed, but there are a whole section, absolutely, of our population,
absolutely,
who is underprivileged, and we are a very generous town, and that's great. But the need also is so great that, and it seems to me like it, the need is getting greater and greater, yeah, because it seems like the haves and the have-nots, the divide is getting bigger, yeah, and bigger right, yeah, now. Mm-hmm. So we have to be more generous and, you know, take it very, very seriously, that if you have, you should give.
Absolutely. We stick together.
Yeah.
Raise all of us in this community, elevate all of us together, take care of those in need. And this is one of those organizations that does just that. You know, and it's about so much more than just teeth. Mm-hmm. And I experienced that myself. I mean, I was so self-conscious of my teeth. I've seen it a million times with these kids and even adults. You restore the health of the teeth, you give them a smile they're confident in, and they become this totally different person when they suddenly feel like they can put their best foot forward out there in the world. I mean, I've seen complete and total introverts go and get jobs, get married, start dating. I mean, some of these people, I'll see them 2 years later and they're not even recognizable. And it all started with a smile.
Right. And you arm them with self-confidence to go, like, go do it, get into the world. The world is not an easy place to thrive in, you know, and you need everything that you can regarding stamina, wit, and self-confidence, and you're arming them with this, which is like...
And I'll never get tired of it. I mean, when you take these people out and they look in the mirror for the first time and they burst into tears, I will never, ever get tired of that, ever. It's really... really lucky and blessed to be able to do this work.
I love it. I love it. So tell us about your son, Hunter.
Yes.
Is a big lacrosse,
yes,
star.
The lacrosse goalie.
Goalie. And they're doing really well.
Walton High School has a phenomenal lacrosse program. We have incredibly talented kids. We have awesome coaches, families. The whole thing is big family.
Travel a lot.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, okay, we're kind of in a rural area here. So we've got to go to Tallahassee and Gulf Breeze and South Florida and Panama City and, you know, all different places, Pensacola, you know, to play and to compete. And last year we were the district champions, which is the furthest the program's ever gone. So my son and his buddies have been playing lacrosse here in Walton County together since they were in third grade. So they're 8 years old. So they're all now, you know, 16 to 18 and have been playing lacrosse together for so long. It's like they don't even have to look at each other. They know where their buddy's going to be standing to throw the ball. And so I think this year and next year are just like the sky's the limit on what this team is going to do. And we're so excited.
Who's he?
He's a junior and he's the goalie, which is a lot of pressure, which means mom is in the stands doing this. You know, I'm sorry, Mark. He told me not to put my hands up there, but. Yes, he is the goalie, so that means I'm in the stands hiding my face between my fingers. Tell me when it's over. But it's so much fun. It's so much fun.
So great. Well, I think the world of you, and you and I have, like, from the moment we met, seem to have, like, just this innate connection that you didn't have to, like, make up or force.
Energetic
and
tether.
I have so much respect for you and admiration. Boys, and then we, boys, thank you. And we also sit on another board together,
yes,
which is Ascension
Sacred Heart.
And you've been there for quite some time.
I've been on that board. I think I'm just about to start like the fifth year on that board. Yeah. I rolled off the Seaside School Board and my husband's like, can we have a break from boards for a while? And one of my dear friends from the school board nominated me for the hospital board. So I took about 2 months off of boards. Such a rewarding board to be a part of, though. And I know, I mean, the people are wonderful. Our medical community here continues to evolve in a beautiful way, and we are still evolving. I've never, ever, ever, ever felt so optimistic and excited about where we're headed to. We've got new leadership now, and Trey's amazing. And BJ, I mean, everybody knows BJ and Trey. And I continue to just be so excited to see how our medical community is evolving, and for us to be able to support that by being on the advisory board is a blessing too.
On that board, I think are genuinely amazing. And even the staff on the hospital that's in the meetings too. Exactly. I mean, there's some genuine care, heart, passion. It's not just a job.
No. Oh my gosh. Yes. That hospital is so special. I mean, it is really a family environment in that hospital, everything from orderlies on up to the executives. And you only get that in a small town. You know what I mean? There's something to that. I really love, too, though, despite us being in a small town, seeing some of these specialties that are providing truly big city level care right here at the beach. It's just really been fun.
Right. Well, you know, you and I had talked a couple of days ago in preparation for this interview and where we were going to go with it. And in life, you know, no one is one-dimensional, right? We're all like multi-dimensional people, and we all have highs and lows and in-betweens, and various things in life are just going to, we're going to have to get through. So I introduce the conversation that we'll start having about you are a breast cancer survivor. Yeah. I am a breast cancer survivor as well, 27 years ago, and this is something that newly occurred in your life. Jump to the end of the story in that you're fine and you're wonderful
and cancer-free.
And you have a wonderful, good, clean bill of health, and you look more amazing than any human being should look. I mean,
it's just a lot coming from you.
Well, no, you look so, so good. And you didn't even seem to skip a beat. But I do know, personally, and you as well, that it is no joke when you get that diagnosis.
Oh gosh, yes.
And it's very, very terrifying and scary. And I know that anyone that gets a cancer diagnosis feels the same way. There's something, in my opinion, that seems especially assaulting against women's body when it's there. And that's kind of plays a lot of psychological games with you and all that. And anyway, just the terror of what's going to happen.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I never like waving like the pink flag, not that there's anything against it, but I don't like people being like a poster child for cancer.
I'm that completely.
I more like viewing it as like a survivor and how you can help people to get through it, but almost not like wave it as, you know, something. I'm like, I wouldn't have wanted it. I'm sure you wouldn't have wanted it either, right? So it's a little, I don't fault anyone for doing that. I've just never been that type of person that was going to front it like that. I'm a little bit more.
It's part of my story, but it's not going to define me.
It's not going to be, exactly. Mm-hmm. Beautifully said.
You and I are on the same page with that. And it's different responses and reactions for everybody. And I have plenty of friends who are like the breast cancer crusaders, and I can't imagine life without them.
Yeah, which is, that's how they want to.
For sure. Just for sure.
Jam.
Mm-hmm.
And I have nothing against how anyone's going to get through anything
it's
at all.
It's a deeply personal thing.
Very personal. Hard to talk about for sure. I'm glad that you're willing to talk about it. You amaze me and everybody else too in the quickness of finding this, getting your diagnosis, going through the operation, which you tell as much or as little as you want about that, but it was, I will say it's, and I don't mean this as just like frivolous words, you are a superwoman, like you should have a cape, but we won't make it pink, we'll make it another color, a red cape.
I mean, unbelievable.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know if anything ever prepares you for that diagnosis. I mean, you know, you went through it just like I did. My mom's a breast cancer survivor, so, you know, I always had a little bit higher of a risk. I had my first biopsy in 2021, came back benign, thankfully, but I've been in the mammogram machine since I was in my 20s, you know. And so can we just get a hoorah for early detection? My mom had stage 3B breast cancer in 1998, which is just one half breath away from stage 4 terminal breast cancer. And she had to fight for her life. I mean, she, chemo, radiation, surgery, you know, the whole thing. And I saw her go through that, and she did it beautifully as well. And, you know, she's 75 now and driving me up the wall. So she's fine and she prevailed. But, you know, I've always been considered higher risk. And speaking of our medical community here, just so vigilant with my screenings and on top of me to be on time with them. And so my cancer was discovered when it was very, very small, just by routine mammogram. I never would have known that I had it. And I think that's where, you know, the harder cases come from, is you don't know you have cancer in your body. And there are tools available for early detection. So fortunately, it was found early by my very, very proactive and thorough OBGYN, Anne Marie Whitlock with Sacred Heart, who's amazing. Even prior to her finding that, she had suggested, let's go ahead and get the breast surgeon on your team just because of your high risk history. So I was already scheduled for an appointment to see Dr. Allison Moody, who is a board certified fellowship trained surgical oncologist of the breast. She did her training at Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles, which is one of the best programs in the country. I was already scheduled with Dr. Moody because of Dr. Whitlock's advice when I got my diagnosis. I got my diagnosis on a Friday. It felt like the whole world stopped, and I was in to see Dr. Moody on Monday. So every breast cancer case, it's like a fingerprint. I mean, you know this, like every breast cancer case, every cancer case is so uniquely different. I had a very small tumor in one breast, but I had two areas of atypical growths that were considered precancerous. So I had 28 square centimeters of tissue that had to be removed. And then in the other breasts, I had two early abnormalities as well. So the conversation for me was always double mastectomy. I mean, right out of the gate. So it's one thing, I think, to get that scary, scary diagnosis. The big C, I think, is scary for anybody. But then I do think, you know, as a woman, to be told that you're going to lose your breasts is scary. And it's sad, you know. It feels sad. It feels disfiguring.
And yeah, like you're marred, you know, yeah. Like you're marred.
And I'm not really a particularly vain person. I don't think any of us are. But, you know, to lose your breasts as a woman is scary. I also, secondary to that, like vanity aside, I didn't want a reminder every day for the rest of my life. I kind of wanted to tackle it, put it in the rearview mirror. So Dr. Moody hooked me up with Dr. Hugo St. Hilaire, who's just a renowned plastic surgeon, specifically for breast reconstruction, which is totally different from cosmetic plastic surgery, and his surgical partner, Dr. Suma Maddox. And I was so blessed and lucky that I was a candidate to have same day double mastectomy and to be reconstructed with my own tissue from my abdominal cavity. I didn't have to have implants. I was able to have my entire surgery all in one day. I walked in with cancer. I lost my breasts. And I woke up from surgery with breasts intact, no cancer, and even a little tummy tuck. Which, you know, if you're going to go through cancer, why not have a little tummy tuck? But, you know, they grafted my abdominal tissue to my breasts. And as a mastectomy patient, you actually want to avoid implants if you can. It's a totally different setup when you've lost your breast. There's nothing to hold an implant like for a cosmetic patient. They take that implant and they have to permanently stitch it down to your pectoral muscle and then stretch the skin over. And so anybody who's not a candidate for having their own tissue grafted to the breasts, they have to have implants if they want to be reconstructed. And, you know, every time you go to pick up the 20-pound bag of dog food or whatever, and that pectoral muscle contracts, I mean, breast cancer patients with implants are known to have ruptures and tears and pain. And I just felt so lucky that I was able to have that surgery. So it was 8 hours long. I had over 500 stitches. But I woke up from surgery, I think anyone would do this. The first thing you do is look down. I just couldn't believe how normal everything looked and felt. I had the best, most amazing care at Sacred Heart. I do want to say, too, that before I went through all that, as we talked about earlier, I'm from Texas. I'm a Texas girl. Cancer Mecca is MD Anderson in Houston. And I had absolute faith in my medical team here. I do think that when we're talking about removing body parts, like, it never hurts to have a second opinion, you know? So I flew down to Houston. They accepted my case. They kept me for 5 days, repeated all of the diagnostics and all of that. And they not only confirmed my diagnosis from A to Z, but they took it an extra step further and said, if that is the team that you have in Florida, you don't need to travel down here. It's hard to travel for. You're going to have drains after surgery to get on an airplane like that. So they took it an extra step and actually blessed me to have that surgery here. And I just am so proud that we're offering this in our community. You know, it's a huge, huge deal.
Huge.
Yeah.
And you went through an 8-hour surgery like nobody's business. I don't even know how. And then you have to know you're a superwoman. How could you do that? And then you're up and about, and now you're taking pictures, and you send me a picture, and I'm like, that person, I must know you for the rest of my life. You're amazing. Resilient is, like, not even a good enough word for what you are. And a good attitude, and you looked, by the way, phenomenal. 2 days after surgery, how can you look that good?
Amazing. Well, the answer is it wasn't just me, Lisa. It was supernatural. Yeah. I mean, I'm a faithful person, and I knew that God had me. And there were some dark moments. I mean, it's scary to go through all that, you know? And you don't really know until after surgery, when everything's been analyzed, if you're going to have chemo and radiation or not. So that's that fear that lingers for a while. And let's face it. I mean, if you think about it, you know, I'm cut from hip to hip, you know, plus all the work on my breasts. And it's at the end of the day, it's a gruesome surgery. If you really think about it, I don't look gruesome. They did an incredible job. I mean, it's mind blowing that this can be done. So I would say 90% of the time, I mean, when you're in that place, you just have to hit your knees and trust God. I mean, what else is there? 90% of the time I was good. 10% of the time there were some rough pity parties. And that's where my village came in. My employees, my patients were amazing, all my best friends, my husband and son, my family. I don't think anybody gets through that on their own. So you tell me you look great. Well, it wasn't just me.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it looks like God's face is shining out of yours and you're just like shining. Very
felt
sunny, sunny disposition, and you look sparkly and sunny.
I felt like I was shown great favor.
You were.
I felt that way.
Oh, thank God.
I felt that way.
That's exactly what you look like.
So lucky.
So lucky. Yeah. And beautiful. And on a like little bit of a funny note, and I think you said you started doing yoga like 3 or 4 weeks later. And how is that even humanly possible?
Well, don't tell Dr. St. Hilaire that. He will come after me. I hope he's not watching. He let me go back at 6 weeks. I was chomping at the bit. I did go back into the office at 3 weeks. I didn't see patients at that point, but I'm sure your desk would be the same way if you were out for 3 weeks. Like, it looked like a bomb had gone off on my desk. So I went in there at week three. I went in there at week three and started kind of clearing off my desk and just kind of getting back into the things. But, you know, I was sitting at home and all the last drain had come out the week before. The drains really are, you know, I had three of them. They're really cumbersome. They're cumbersome. As soon as that last drain was out, I felt like Superwoman. I really felt like Superwoman. I wasn't doing anything at home anymore besides driving my husband up the wall. You know, I wasn't taking pain medication anymore. I felt good. And I really mean this. Like, my work fulfills me.
Yes.
You know, so I was back at 4 weeks with my patients. I didn't have the same load as usual. I eased into that. Back in yoga at 6 weeks at my beloved yoga studio, Mist 30A, which is just downstairs from my office. It's like family and home to me.
Can you do everything? Can you do all the
things? I can do almost all the things. Maybe not as good as before, but still like improving week after week. I really feel like yoga was like the best physical therapy to get the body moving. And yoga's good for the mind too, you know.
Meditation.
So I really honestly credit yoga before going into that surgery and in pretty good shape. And then the yoga afterward has really helped to get me moving again. You know, they remove this massive amount of tissue from your abdomen and essentially pull you back together. So when I came out of surgery, I was almost 90 degrees for a couple weeks. And it takes a while to get back upright, you know? And once I was able to go to yoga, I feel like my recovery really was kind of exponentially fast after that. So I'm thankful every single day. I definitely, like, sometimes don't feel worthy. You know, I'm grateful every single day.
You're so worthy. So we are going to have you as a feature article in the wellness issue in January. So this is sort of like the foretelling of that. And so we'll be able to have you in the magazine as well. And I'm so looking forward to it. And as I said at the beginning, you know, you truly are an inspiration. And to be able to tell your story, as you already have through all of the people that you know and love you now on this podcast, the people will be listening can help. And then in the magazine, as your story perpetuates and all that you can give to other people to have faith and get through it. And some people have a harder time than others. Okay. So, I mean, this is, I'm not trying to sugarcoat this or make it easy, you know, because it's not. So, when you and I were first talking, is it 3 months ago maybe that we were talking when I knew that you had it and you hadn't had the operation yet?
Yeah.
Was it three months?
Okay. Yeah. Because, yeah, diagnosis is in March. So, yeah, maybe like this summer. But the surgery was in June. So, yeah, something like that.
So we reached out to each other. I forget who reached out to who first. And then I was praying with you because after my bout, 27 years ago, and having like such a hard year of many, many things that happened to overcome that, and a young marriage, we had been married a year and a half. So when you like, there's a lot going against you at the beginning of that. It was stage zero, which I was grateful for, but it did require a mastectomy and reconstruction. And then the oncologist at the time said, go live your life. You know, you don't need chemo or radiation and, you know, move on with your life. So I took him at his word and then we got pregnant. And I was super happy about that. And then lost the baby through a miscarriage, which was devastating. So those first 2-3 years of marriage were hit like so hard. But, you know, obviously we're still together and thriving and we got through it. But that was like a tough way to start out. But because I felt like God was so good to me in all the ways that you do, similarly, I like made it my life's mission that anyone that had breast cancer, I was going to meet them, I was going to visit them, I was going to pray with them, and I was going to see them through to the other side. So I've prayed with maybe 30, 40 people in the last 27 years who have breast cancer. And so I was so happy to be able to do the same for you, or not happy, that's not the right word. Join the fight in faith with God that you would be okay.
Yes.
Okay, just be a soldier in the army for your healing. And I had told you I had this scripture given to me several years back then, 27 years ago, that this affliction would not come on me twice. So I never thought it was going to be here again. And so I had such confidence to pray with everybody that I ever met and encountered who did. And so only recently, a couple of months ago, I had had something and I'm like, this doesn't look right and it doesn't feel right. So I went and got checked. And then it was like, oh, yes, it is cancer. I'm like, no, it can't be cancer because it's not supposed to happen again. And this is the word that I'm standing on. And it was like literally like I know people probably thought I was in shock, which I was sort of in shock, but I mostly was like, no, you don't understand. I don't believe it. Not because I'm in shock, but because I've been standing on this word from God from 27 years ago. So this does not compute. Yeah. It just didn't compute to me because I never feared it at all.
When I found out, it didn't even compute for me, for you.
Yes, so either. I had told you that.
I'm like, we've already done this 27 years ago.
Right, right. So that, I had a wrestling match with God on that one for a couple of weeks. I'm like, I just don't understand. Like, how am I going to file it? Am I still having faith on that? Like, I don't know what's going on. But because over the years, and it's been a long time since then, like so many things have happened and God's always been faithful to me and always been very kind and had tremendous favor and always helped me, that I just took it, well, he's going to help me again. And then I would remember all the different things he has done for me over the years. And he never failed me once. And I'm like, why would I think he's going to fail me now? Because he never did before. Like, how insulting of me to think that this time now he's not going to help me. So I've had a measure of faith that is like not even possible.
Supernatural
in these last like couple of months. And just waiting and believing. And I've had some very scary diagnoses that like people were saying, like, really? I'm like, I don't even believe that. That's like too scary and all that. Anyway, I won't get into the whole thing, but you know what it is. And then just today, 2 hours ago, I got a call from a doctor in New Orleans who said this is going to be easy to deal with. And he sees no problem that I would need chemo or radiation after. And this is how the moment I get to talk to you.
Gonna make me cry again. I know. It's just, I don't believe in those accidents either. Like, no.
I was gonna be fine. Like, whatever, like, I didn't know or didn't know if it was bad. I'm a professional and I love you and I wanna tell your story. So I would sit here and I would bring it and I would do my job, you know, because I love my job as well. Just like I have a passion for this, just like you have a passion for what you do. And I would be fine. But I will have to say it's an extra sweet spot today that I can have this conversation with you and be able to share the news.
I'm so happy, Lisa. The best is you did it before. You're going to do it again. And I want to thank you. And I'm sure you felt this way today. I'm sure you felt the same way 27 years ago, like sharing the news, right? I didn't know initially how I felt about that. I was just so shell-shocked just on my own, like dealing with it. FaceTiming my parents to tell them was the hardest. I mean, the hardest is grown adults. You're not supposed to bring your parents
bad news,
sadness or fear anymore. I mean, I'll never forget their faces. It was the hardest. But, you know, you're in the public eye. I'm a doctor. I have a ton of patients. And what ended up happening with me is I had to cancel so many patients. As you know, there are so many appointments in the beginning when they're getting all the diagnostics worked out. And so many patients had to be canceled and rescheduled. I didn't want to. I needed their grace. I didn't want them to think that they were just kept getting moved around because I had a golf match on a sunny day or, you know.
Right. Right. You were in the Caribbean having some Mai Tais.
I wish. But MD Anderson. So what we ended up doing, and I didn't want to like broadcast it either. So what we ended up doing, my office manager, my treatment coordinator and I, I didn't even do it. I was too buried. They did it. I left it up to them. They went through and kind of picked out like the 50 like current most active patients, like in the middle of the cosmetic process or whatever. And I wrote a letter from me saying, I'm going to be fine, but here's what's going on. And I would be so thankful for your support and your patience with rescheduling or whatever. Well, you know what a small town we live in. So I didn't mean to broadcast it, right? But that email went out and I was with patients that day and I got back to my desk like an hour later. It was like 122 text messages, right? So here's what I want to thank you for. when you tell your story and when you share your vulnerability and when people look at you and see how beautiful you are and how vibrant you are, you're a testimony of, I've had cancer, I have it again, I'm going to be fine. And you inspire people like me. You know, you are such a huge support to me this summer when I was going through this, when I was in some of my darkest moments. And I could look at you as a shining light, an example of, I can get through this and I will get through this. So I was kind of thrust into sharing my story because we technically had to like let the patients know, then everybody knew. But I look back on it and I'm like, okay, if it helps one person the way you helped me, the way you helped me, if I can help one person, then my story is worth sharing. So
yes, your story is true. You're welcome. I don't think I did anything, but
yes, you did.
Maybe you have a book in you. You probably have a book in you. This is going to go on, you know, because you have a testimony. Yeah. You have it should be called Superwoman Lives Today. That should be the name of the book.
Takes one to know one, girl.
Oh my gosh, well, it's crazy. Do you have any words of wisdom for anyone that might be going through this? I mean, I know some people right now that have come into my life very recently who are having a much harder time.
Yeah, I have those too. Yes,
I have.
Yes,
and they're desperate and they're looking like, why do you think this is happening? And I'm like, oh, I'm not a doctor, and like I feel so bad for these people. And then I think, like, how does somebody get it so much worse than like another person? And it's devastating.
Oh, absolutely.
I can't stop thinking about this one person who I've been praying with and talking to for the past 5 days. And
you almost have like some survivor's remorse over it a little bit or something, where journey?
It can be very serious, and it can be horrible. Not that yours wasn't, but then it wasn't the same story as someone else. You have victory.
Yeah. I think that it's normal and it's okay to feel fear and sadness and to recognize that and to embrace it. Mentality has been scientifically proven to affect outcomes. I think you allow yourself to have the pity parties when you need them. I think crying is therapeutic. But then I think whatever you have to do to think positively, to get your mind in the right place and tackle it. And don't be afraid to reach out. You know, so you and I both have all of these friends, these cancer sisters, and everybody's story is different. But I really think that that support is so, so just invaluable, because it's people that have been through it and no one understands what you're going through better than other people who have been through it.
And on the heels of that, what I have found very recently in my own walk is to fight mentally, to fight to live, to fight to beat it and not, you know, just fight.
Looking for the silver linings every day. There is a silver lining in every day. You can find it. On some of my darkest days, it took a little more effort, you know, to find it, but there's something to be thankful for every single day. There really is, if you can hang on to that, you know?
Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for letting us be in your gorgeous home on the bay. Stunning. And for being you. You are an amazing person.
Well, I think the same of you, and it's my honor to sit by you today. I hope I did you proud.
You did do me proud, so proud.
My heart rate can start going down now.
You did great, too. You didn't seem nervous one bit. No,
thank you for having me,
good conversation.
Lisa. You're the best. I love you.
I love you. All right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this. And for anyone that's going through it, like, we both stand in solidarity with you. You can get through it. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. Have a good day, everybody. Bye.